Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You know, all kinds of things can affect your sleep. How much you exercise to what you eat throughout the day, that can have an impact. Even how much natural light you get. And we're going to talk about that a little bit with our two guests, Jill Tye-Nissenbaum and Carrie Schwerer. Jill is an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison, and Carrie manages the UW Health Spine and Orthopedics team. She directs orthopedic residency there. So it's great to have both of them with us. Are you sleeping well? I had all kinds of weird dreams last night on three or four different occasions.
Oh, no.
What about you? Have you had trouble falling asleep or staying asleep? How has sleep changed as you gotten older? And, of course, do you have any questions about an ache or a pain or our physical therapists' questions for them? I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Carrie, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
I'm glad to be here.
And Jill, good to see you, too.
It's great to be here on this snowy day.
So do you typically ask your patients about their sleeping habits when they come to you with other injuries or aches or pains?
You know, that is such a great question, and I do. But through my experience, I feel like it needs to be higher on the priority list. Many times if patients have had surgery, we always ask them, well, how are you sleeping at night with your surgery? Because your arm has to be in a certain position or your leg has to be in a certain position. But the people who have not had surgery, sometimes I'm a little neglectful on that, I'll be honest. And what we've learned is sleep is such an essential part of our lifestyle, and particularly when you're injured, the healing process. So the term that we really use is sleep hygiene. It should be a routine that you have, just like a routine for anything else, like brushing your teeth, flossing, anything like that. And the Sleep Foundation recommends numerous ideas in order to sleep better at night. Things like limiting naps during the day. They shouldn't be longer.
I never nap during the day.
That's good.
Because if I did, I wouldn't sleep at night.
Right, right. If you do nap, 30 minutes or less. So you can't go into this deep, deep sleep and be there for a couple hours. So a short nap is okay, but if you can get by without napping, that's fantastic. Avoiding stimulants such as caffeine and nicotine close to bedtime. That might be sometimes, Larry, why people have dreams. If they have caffeine or chocolate right before bed, some people report having weird dreams.
That's why I had those dreams last night, because I had some Gail Ambrosius chocolate.
There you go.
With my daughter.
There you go. And so a lot of times that will change sleep patterns as well. So that I'm not going to lie, that's probably worth it because the chocolate is really good. But that can be a factor as well. And then the other thing that is so important to us is exercising. And exercising mm-hmm. is essential to helping us and promote good sleep. And Carrie and I were both just at a national conference, and one of the things they talked about was sleep and how it impacts everything.
So if you consider that you spend approximately a third of your life sleeping, that just highlights how important it is to get that sleep, because it's really important for immune function in addition to all the things that Jill had talked about. That's how your body helps to regenerate itself. And when you're not getting enough sleep, your brain isn't getting recharged. So during the day, it is trying to use that energy you had instead of you using it for more meaningful things. And similar to what Jill said about maybe being a little neglectful and asking about sleep, I think that it's only been in the past maybe 5 or 10 years that we've really come to realize how important that is in terms of patients' responses to pain. So it's not unusual to have chronic pain if you're not sleeping well because you're not getting that regenerative sleep.
Mm.
Right.
Well, I shoot for 7 hours.
7 hours is great. Actually, the Sleep Foundation has recommendations on how many hours we should be sleeping. And adults between the ages of 26 and 64 is 7 to 9 hours.
Oh,
anybody right. over 65, the range is 7 to 8. So you have to consider within this range, you have to consider the person. So Carrie and I both have kids, and I would definitely say when one of my children was age 10, they needed a certain amount of sleep. My younger one didn't need as much sleep, and they could function just fine. So within that window of time, you have to figure out what works for you. But I would say, as we know, society as a whole is horrifically low on the hours of sleep that they get at night.
Yeah, and I often slip to 6.
Yep.
But exactly. I try for 7.
Yep.
I have a lot of reading to do for authors I have on the show and so forth. So my habit is the worst probably because I usually read a little before I go to sleep.
And that's not terrible as long as it's not a stimulating book. So as long as your routine is the same, it's not awful. Let me ask you this. Are you reading on an electronic device?
No.
Okay. That's good.
I don't like reading on an electronic.
I don't either.
I'm too old for it or
Me
something.
Me too.
Some preliminary studies have shown that the blue light from electronic devices can actually interfere with the normal brain waves that help promote sleep. So reading is a really good part of the habit that Jill was talking about, the routine for getting ready for bed. It can be very relaxing, but you want to try and avoid your devices, which can be challenging for some folks.
Yeah,
right.
I'm sure of that. Evelyn in Randolph, Wisconsin has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Evelyn.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning. I am 65. I have not slept through the night for more than a 5-hour stretch, and that's very rare, for approximately 30 years.
Oh.
I have tried over-the-counter sleep aids, Unisom, Somnex, whatever. I just don't handle them well. It takes me until noon before I can normally function.
Yeah.
I had a hip replaced 5 years ago. That does not really give me a problem. I do have a lot of arthritis, and I sleep in a recliner. Good, bad, or otherwise.
So are you sleeping in the recliner and still only getting these 5 hours of sleep a night?
Correct.
Okay. And what is it about the recliner that you think is better than your bed? Is it because you're upright a little more?
Yes. I cannot lay flat.
Because it hurts your back?
The
or you
back.
Can't.
There's, okay. There's 3 spots. The facet joints are crumbling.
Oh, dear. Okay.
And there are 3 separate spots where that's happening. This is my mom all over again.
Oh, no.
However, my mom lived to 93, so I'm like, I do not want to spend 30 years.
In a recliner.
30 years of my life.
Right. So the issue with sleeping in a recliner is you're limited in how much you can move and load other joints, which is part of the problem. Have you tried sleeping in a bed with body pillows or a big wedge to support you so you're a little bit more upright and that doesn't work?
To hold my knees up especially, to hold my legs up, because to curve backwards on the back is the worst.
Right. Yeah, and that's fantastic. Putting a pillow under your knees is fantastic. But have you slept with a wedge under your back to kind of keep you a little bit more upright?
I have not tried that.
So that might be worth a try just because even though you're on your back and you're kind of mirroring the recliner position, it gives you an opportunity to move and load your joints differently that a recliner doesn't.
Okay.
The other thing, of course, although there's expense involved, is a bed that will...
One of those movable beds that you can make all those positions. Yes, exactly. That's also an option. So you may want to try some of these wedges that you can get at, for example, Bed Bath & Beyond, and there's other stores that carry those, and see if something like that helps. I don't know, Carrie, do you have any other thoughts on that?
Well, I was just going to ask, Evelyn, are you getting 5 solid hours of sleep, or are you...
That's rare.
That's rare. So are you...
I don't need to get up and use the restroom. There's no noise. There's nothing that makes me wake up. It's just all of a sudden, bink, I'm wide awake.
Yeah.
Well, and sometimes when we stay in one spot for too long, our muscles start to ache because we haven't moved. In a bed, you have a little more opportunity to do slight rolling, even if it's not a full roll.
Right.
And that keeps the circulation going. But you answered my question about if there were other things waking you up that we could potentially give advice on.
But all the more reason, it sounds like, to be in a bed.
Right. Give it a try. Absolutely. Yeah. Try repositioning multiple positions, get some body pillows, and see if even occasionally you can sleep in a bed so you're not constantly in that recliner, because loading those joints in one position over time is going to be really hard. And if you're going to live to be 95, we'd like to see you sleeping in something other than a recliner, Evelyn.
Yep. Good. Hey, me too.
All right. Good luck. Thanks for calling. Bob in Minocqua, we'll go to you next. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Today?
Oh, we're doing great.
I don't have an sleep problem. Well, I do have a sleep problem, but that's not why I called. My right ankle, 4 weeks ago tomorrow, I woke up in the morning, got out of bed, and I almost couldn't stand on it. It hurt like crazy. I tried walking a little bit, got to the bathroom, and since then, it's had good days, bad days, but most of them, I struggle walking. I thought it might have been gout at one point, so I went to my nurse practitioner. We got the uric acid test, and that was normal. I do have rheumatoid arthritis, and so we thought, well, maybe it was something with that. And so we got an x-ray, and I just talked to her Friday, and she said there doesn't appear to be anything abnormal about that. I do have a tender spot just behind that bone on the ankle, on the backside of it, really tender, and it's not allowing me to flex that joint. And I was wondering where I go from here.
Bob, was there anything you were doing in the couple of days prior to waking up with that pain that might have been unusual for your normal routine?
Not that I can remember. That's the bad part.
Yeah.
Different shoes?
Nope. I've had the same shoes for a few years. My wife thought about that, and I said, I've had these for a few years, and I've never had a problem.
Okay. So I'm glad you ruled out gout. Usually gout affects the great toe, but it can affect anywhere in the lower extremity. So getting that ruled out is a great idea, and I'm glad you have normal x-rays. That kind of rules out bone, so now we're thinking about soft tissue. So when you say it's tender, it's on the inside but right behind the kind of ankle bone?
Yeah, that part that protrudes out of the ankle joint.
Yep. Right. So there are some tendons that run there. We call them Tom, Dick, and Harry. But seriously, that's how you remember when you're in school. But your posterior tibialis tendon runs along there, and it has to support your arch when you walk. That's why I was asking about shoe wear and why Carrie was asking if you did something differently in those previous days. It's a very common place to get an overuse injury. Most people will report some sort of mechanism of injury, whether it's prolonged walking, change in shoes, change in footwear, change in surface, something like that. So it doesn't sound like that's the case with you, but dealing with this for a month and it's really not improving, I think it's time to see a physical therapist. Would you agree, Carrie?
I would agree, Jill.
Yeah, you have lots of great PTs up by you, and seeing them to see exactly what's going on would be great. Walking is traditionally something we think of as being very symmetrical. So anytime you get something just on one side and not the other, we always wonder why. So it'd be really good to look all the way up the chain and make sure there's not anything coming from your hip, your knee, or anything else.
And if you've worn the same shoes for years and years,
maybe it's time for new shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
could be
what
time
I was
too.
Thinking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think about my heels on my, and so forth on my shoes after even a year.
It's, yep. Yep. So a physical therapist would be, and I would take those shoes with you, Bob, but a physical therapist can help you with all of those things and make some recommendations for you.
Good luck. Thank you
very
much.
Thanks for
calling. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Talking about, we've talked a little about sleep and physical therapy and how it relates to that with our two guests, Carrie Schwer and Jill Tine-Nissenbaum from the University of Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller, and Natalie Guyette are on air producer today, Nigel O'Shea, our engineer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at physical therapy issues today, we're dealing a bit with sleep hygiene, but taking some other questions as well with our two guests. Carrie Schwerer manages the UW Health Spine Orthopedics team, and also Jill Tine-Nissenbaum, associate professor in the UW-Madison Doctor of Physical Therapy program. Taking calls now, we've got John in Jefferson up next, I believe. Hi, John.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Recently, I've been diagnosed by a doctor at UW Sports Medicine there as having a rotator cuff tear. And he explained to me that it was so small that he'd probably do more damage going in than anything, so he put me on physical therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I was doing that twice a week down in Fort Atkinson at the Sports Spine Clinic. And after a couple of months, I wasn't really noticing too much of an improvement, so I went back to him. And he said, well, your strength is good and all that kind of stuff. He says, you know, let's keep doing physical therapy, but knock it down to one day a week. So I did that. But I still have the pain, of course, but it seems to be like now it's back into my underneath my shoulder blade.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not so sure if it's because of the way I'm trying to sleep at night, because I'm not getting much sleep at all.
And
he explained to me, he said, that's one of the biggest complaints about this is that, you know, it's hard to sleep.
Yeah.
I would say, it's funny you say that. I was originally going to talk about people with shoulder pathology and rotator cuff pathology, and sometimes their number one complaint is their inability to sleep at night, John. So you are not alone. So just a little bit on rotator cuff tears. Many people have a small rotator cuff tear. By the time we're in our 70s, over half of us have some small rotator cuff tears. They're really putting small cuff tears as part of the natural age-related process now. It's unfortunately becoming the norm. So you're right, to go in and have surgery on a small cuff tear could do more damage than good. So then we have to kind of consider all the pros and cons. Now, the reason why people who have cuff pathology have difficulty sleeping at night is because you are using muscles to hold your joint in a somewhat comfortable position all day long. And when you relax those muscles, the ball and socket joint move around enough that you get kind of a pinching sensation. And that's what makes it very difficult to sleep. So recommendations for sleeping with rotator cuff pathology are to sleep. If you can sleep in your bed, it's great, but a little support under your head and neck, and then your arm supported with a couple of pillows. So it's kind of out to the side, per se. Almost
both arms?
Just the affected side.
Okay.
So on your back, but supported. So if you think about driving a car and resting your right arm on a console, something along those lines seems to work really well. Have you tried
another pillow?
Yep, a pillow or two. Have you tried anything like that, John?
No, I have not.
I would start with that and see how you do, because that's a more comfortable position for your shoulder.
Another thing to ask you, John, is do you sleep with your arm overhead or at shoulder level at all?
I tried. If I can get it above my shoulder, it feels good, but bringing it down, oh, it just drives me crazy.
Because bringing your arm up to or above shoulder height actually pinches the rotator cuff between the bones, so that can cause less blood flow while you're lying there sleeping. And the thing about sleep is it's subconscious, so it's really hard to change. So something I've recommended to my patients over the years is to actually pin the sleeve of your pajamas to the trunk of your pajamas so you can't go too far. And combined with Jill's recommendation for the pillow underneath the arm, that may just give those tissues a little more opportunity to heal up.
Good advice.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Good luck.
Thanks, John. Thank you for calling. Let's go to Marcus next in Green Bay. Hi, Marcus.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, I've been diagnosed with spondylolisthesis, scoliosis, and arthritis in my lower back. About 3 years ago. They did an MRI or whatever. So my question is an operation an option? I didn't ask my doctor that. I haven't seen her for a while. But, you know, I do my stretches, and it hurts like heck. Boy, she's getting really bad. I can barely cook. You know, I can't stand at the kitchen counter hardly. The only time I'm comfortable is when I'm sitting in my office chair with my feet up. I could barely go grocery shopping. I'm using an electric cart now. And I just wonder, you know, is an operation an option? I think they said no with the spondylolisthesis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you have a lot going on, Marcus, but obviously this is very much impacting your lifestyle. So it sounds like you're doing some stretches for your back, which is good. And you mentioned that sitting makes it feel better, which tells us that you like to be kind of unloaded. So have you tried any pool therapy up in Green Bay?
What kind of?
pool, getting in a pool and doing some exercises in a pool?
No, but I definitely thought about that, yeah. But no, I haven't done it. But yeah, I thought about that, yeah.
So I think we have many options for you prior to even considering surgery. And the first thing I would consider is seeing a physical therapist and trying some pool exercises in a warm water pool to see if we can get you a little bit stronger and unload you well enough so you can have less pain with your activities of daily living. That would kind of be my first line of defense. The second line of defense, and only if your physicians thought you were a candidate for it, would be some sort of injection. So I think you have many, many options before you go down the path of surgery. And you want to really make sure you exhaust all your conservative options before you start discussing surgery, because that, with everything you have going on, that would be challenging.
Yeah.
Surgery comes with its own challenges postoperatively. So if you can get yourself into the best balance among your different muscles, which a physical therapist can help you do, pool or land, that's really the best bet.
Good luck, and thanks very much. Yeah, thanks, Marcus. Appreciate the call. Well, John in Waterloo, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Hi, Larry. This is actually John Hendrickson, sometime guest on your show.
Yeah, hi, John.
Hey there. So I was interested in the comments that were made earlier about the appropriate length for a nap during the day of being a half an hour, and my question is, whether that holds true during one's entire lifespan. And the reason I ask that is that I have elderly parents who are up to two naps a day. Sometimes they get up and have breakfast and kind of go right back to bed for a nap. So I'm just curious as to whether what your comments about that.
Yeah. Well, that's a great question. And I guess the first question I have for you, John, is it impacting their sleep at night? Because if it's not, and they need that much rest, then I would say it's fine. So the million-dollar question is, are they still sleeping okay at night?
Okay. Well, I'm actually visiting them this coming weekend, and we'll make those inquiries and make some in-house observations as well.
Great. So I would start with that and make sure that they're having a restful night's sleep. And then if you feel like it is impacting their night, I would probably keep the two naps, but shorten them down a little bit, because they probably need a little recovery in the morning and a little recovery in the afternoon, but maybe perhaps shortening their naps might help them sleep better at night.
Yeah, if they're having trouble.
Correct. If they're having trouble at night. If they're not having trouble at night, then I think you're A-okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go,
Thanks
John.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Let's take a call from Terry in Ladysmith, Wisconsin. Hi, Terry.
Hello.
Hi, what can we do for you?
Well, your associate said you were talking about dreaming. And I have multiple surgeries. I've had my left leg broke and the fibula and fibula. And I have a metal rod down my leg. And I have my right ankle broke in a snowmobile accident and then crushed by a forklift.
Oh.
And I had two plates put in my right ankle, and I had my left elbow crushed and had lap band surgery on it. And I've had my C12 fractured.
So you've had a lot.
Right. You have a lot of surgeries and a lot of hardware. So do you have a question for us, Terry?
Well, the question is what kind of I applied for Social Security, and I try to work out every single day. I walk a lot.
So you work out a lot?
I walk a lot. I work out a lot.
You walk a lot, okay.
But, claiming Social Security, I already applied for it, and they said, well, no, you can work.
You're breaking up a bit,
yeah.
Terry. I know I can tell from the screen here that you apparently have frequent dreaming.
Right. So dreaming can be, first of all, we all dream whether we remember them or not. But I think Terry's question was, does what effect frequent dreaming has on our sleep? And according to the National Sleep Foundation, it doesn't have a significant effect on your sleep architecture. So it won't necessarily change how much time you spend in the different different stages of sleep or the number of times you awaken. So you may remember more dreams sometimes than others, but according to the National Sleep Foundation, it doesn't really affect your overall sleep structure. So I hope that helps.
Yeah, I'm sorry we had the quality problem with the microphone. You know, I had three different sets of dreams last night, which is...
And you can remember them all.
I don't remember any of them.
Okay.
I remember that they were really weird.
That but, happens.
Oh. Terry, thank you. Tom in Nelson, Wisconsin, it's your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hello. Yeah, I have this... I'm 71 now, and I'm getting this problem this year, which I consider a problem. For instance, if I only get like 5 hours of sleep because it's like, well, I wasn't tired that night, couldn't get to bed early. Anyhow, I have this problem that after I eat, if I have an afternoon snack or after my evening meal, I can't avoid falling asleep. I'm sitting there, I'm watching television in my recliner and just have my feet up, and I don't want to take a nap, but then suddenly it's like, whoops, I just missed 45 minutes of TV, and now I'm like, oh, shit. How can I avoid that nap?
Well, I would say that when you eat, you have more blood flow go to your stomach to help you with digestion. So that's a very normal part of everyday life. But what I can recommend is after you've had that snack or you've had that meal, you could get up and take a brief walk or do some sort of exercise. And that can help counteract that if you're really not wanting to fall asleep for the remainder of the day. I know I personally, when I have lunch at my desk, mm-hmm. I tend to get a little drowsy. So I get up and I try and round with the rest of my team to see how they're doing, if anything's needed, check in with my schedulers, because that is something that I think all of us can fall victim to quite easily.
Absolutely. And the other thing is, you had mentioned that you didn't get to bed early the night before because you weren't tired. So we may need to step back and break this vicious cycle. So it may be that you weren't tired because you napped that day. And so looking at your whole sleep hygiene schedule, checking to make sure you're not having caffeine too close to bedtime, making sure that you are sleeping in kind of a cool environment with no screens and all of those things, you might be able to get to bed earlier, get that adequate sleep, and then you won't feel the need to nap after lunch. So I think there's kind of two things going on. What Carrie said, get moving after you eat and then kind of reassess your sleep hygiene.
And take a look at your curtains.
Take a look at your curtains. Make sure that it's not too warm. 60 to 70 degrees, I think, is ideal sleep temperature for you. Make sure your bed is comfortable. All of those things, kind of establish a nighttime routine, doing something calming before bed. Those are all good things.
Good luck, Tom. Thank you so much for calling. Mary in Pewaukee has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Mary.
Hi, yes. Good morning. I wanted to just let you know that unlike some of the other people, I'm getting maybe not too much sleep, but a lot more. 8, 9, 10 hours of sleep is not that unusual for me, which for me, it's not a problem. I am retired. My husband works second shift, so it's quiet and comfortable. So I didn't know if there is any problem with oversleeping. If it's called beauty sleep, well, it's not. But the other thing I wanted to bring up, so the second point is for my husband. Now, he does work. He does have erratic sleep because he has, number one, a CPAP, and two, he has a lot of pain. So he's on a couple of different pain relievers, and what worries me is over the years if that's going to be very detrimental to his organs. I mean, a doctor is prescribing them. They know how much he takes. He goes in for the regular, you know, checks, drug related, prescription meds. And the other thing is about, what about CBD oil? The person that answered the phone said, yes, it is legal to order it in Wisconsin, but that may or may not even be an answer for him, or maybe along with his meds that his doctor prescribes. But any comments on that, please?
Well, I'll take your first question, and then I'll let Carrie address the issues with your husband. So I don't think the sleep that you're getting is too much. If that is what your body needs, that is what you do. So the National Sleep Foundation has a range, and you certainly fall within that range. And so that's very reasonable. As long as you're not waking up sore, stiff from being in one position for a prolonged period of time, you feel refreshed during the day, you're not groggy, I think the amount of that is the amount of sleep that you personally need, and I think that's just fine. There are many people out there who are very jealous that you can get that kind of sleep.
Yeah,
so it's good.
Sure.
Yeah.
It sounds like your husband may be one of those jealous folks.
Right, exactly.
So in regards to taking painkillers, you know, over the long haul, the physicians are going to continue to monitor that. If you really have that concern that it's too much, that would be something to discuss with the physicians, because there are also other things that can be paired with painkillers, such as exercise. Before bed, you may or may not want to exercise, depending upon how your husband responds to that. But some people will have a cup of herbal tea before going to bed, something warm to help get their body ready for sleep. So, you know, taking the painkillers in and of itself is not a bad thing, as long as it's being monitored medically to make sure that all of those side effects that you're concerned about aren't problematic. So
there you go, Mary. Thank you so much for calling. Well, Leslie and Madison up next. Hi, Leslie. Leslie, are you there? Oh, I guess we lost Leslie. Well, let's try Peter in Washburn. Hi, Peter.
Hi. I have neuropathy, and I take gabapentin. Some nights it's okay. Sometimes it's pain. But I have pain in, like, knee, groin, shoulder. I've had a broken shoulder operation. And so I quite often have been taking two Tylenol PMs at night. Now, there's two questions for this. One is, at what point am I just taking too much Tylenol? But also, it's now, even though they say it's non-addictive and stuff, if I don't take them, I find that even if I'm not feeling too bad, because that's why I didn't take them, I can't actually sleep. And so if it's non-addictive, but what's going on there that if I don't take them, I can't sleep? And is there something that would do the pain and help me sleep that's maybe healthier?
Well, so first of all, again, if you look at your kind of sleep routine, I would look very carefully and make sure that there's not something that you're doing during the day that is making it difficult for you to sleep at night. And that, you know, you're doing something during the day and then you take the Tylenol PM to kind of balance that out so you can sleep at night. So first of all, I'd look very thoroughly at kind of your sleep hygiene. The other thing you can take, I don't know if you've ever tried it, is melatonin, which is an over-the-counter sleep aid, which is something that we actually, our bodies actually produce on their own. And some people feel that taking a little melatonin can help get them to sleep, and they can do that without any issues. I don't know. Carrie, do you have any thoughts?
I'm just wondering what positions you're maybe sleeping in at night because of the back pain and the pain from the shoulder fracture.
Yeah, there's no real back pain. It's groin, knees, feet, shoulder, elbow, and I've had a broken wrist too that right now is bothering me. But I've tried melatonin. I've not noticed a difference. I take anywhere from 35 to 70 milligrams or micrograms, whatever it is, of CBD, and that actually over time has kind of reduced the pain. And then the pain at night, I don't nap at all, but yeah, the pain at night is based on, did I spend the whole day shoveling? Did I spend it all sitting? Both of those are bad. Or
yeah.
Did I spend the day doing light movements? But the days I did light movements, then my pain's not bad, but I don't take the Tylenol. But if I don't take the Tylenol now, even with no real pain, I can't fall asleep. It'll take a while. I'll sleep for an hour or two, and then I'll be up again, and then sleep. So I will fall asleep, but it's short bursts throughout the night.
Peter, do you associate the neuropathy along with the groin pain, or do you feel like that's something separate from why you're taking the Tylenol?
The groin comes from a a long ago injury that it flares back up.
Okay. And do you have a normal stretching routine, walking routine, any sort of exercise that you partake in on a daily basis?
I do some Tai Chi, not every day. But I'm actually taking a class now, so I'm doing it three times a day and learning more. And so I've started doing it more often on the off days. And that helps in the morning to get me limbered up and to operate through the day. I've not really noticed that it helps me that night.
Well, it sounds like you're doing a lot of right things. You're trying new exercise. You're doing some mobility things. This may be something that you actually want to talk to your physician about and see if there's some sort of issues within your medication. You had mentioned taking gabapentin. That may need to be monitored or changed a little bit. So if I think you're doing a lot of the right things, but if you're not getting there, this may be something where you kind of need to go back to your physician. And, you know, there are sleep programs, many larger facilities like UW Health has a sleep center. And so it may be one of those things, if you are having difficulty with that, your physician can refer you for a sleep study as well. We haven't even talked about that.
Yeah, that's a definite possibility. There right. may be other things going on.
Correct.
Sleep apnea.
Correct. Absolutely. So
that are doing it. Another caller, just along the same lines, another caller who couldn't stay on wondered about valerian root. He says he's been taking it. It helps him sleep a lot, but sometimes taking the directed dose makes him a little too sleepy and too hard to get up in the morning.
So. Right. So with any of these types of herbal supplements, non-FDA regulated substances, it's very important that you check with your physician and or your pharmacist to make sure that they don't have a negative interaction with any current medications that you're taking. This is one that I'm not that familiar with. I don't know, Carrie, are you familiar with it?
I am not. This is a new one
yeah.
for me.
So it would definitely be one of those things that I would have him talk to his physician and make sure that the physician knows that he's taking it, the dose he's taking, and make sure it's not negatively interacting with some of his other medications.
There you go,
yeah.
Peter. Thanks very much for calling. Leslie in Madison, your turn. Hi, Leslie.
Yes, I'm right here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm a woman and I'm 56 years old and I'm menopausal and I had trouble sleeping and I always thought that I was doomed to poor sleep because I was menopausal. But I've also known that how warm my bed is determines whether or not I can sleep. If it's nice and cool in my bedroom, I'm much more able to sleep than if it's warm. And what I've also found is that if I don't eat any protein after about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, then I don't have any trouble sleeping through the night. Or if I eat anything substantial, any carbohydrates that are substantial, like at 8 o'clock at night, then I won't be able to sleep through the night. So I think that the metabolism, if you eat things where it's a lot of work for your body to metabolize it, then you give off a lot of heat, and that will cause you to have it causes me to have the disrupted sleep, where I'll be able to go to sleep at first, and then I'll wake up a couple of hours later, and I won't be able to go to sleep for 3 hours.
That's a really good point. So you brought up two really good points. Number one, the cooler bedroom, the cooler environment is something that the National Sleep Foundation does recommend. And the other thing they do recommend is steering clear of certain foods that can be disruptive right before sleep. They had mentioned heavier rich foods, spicy dishes, and carbonated drinks can trigger indigestion for some people. And it can lead to heartburn. So whether it's a heartburn issue or it's a blood flow issue, if you found that eating, you know, protein, which is I would usually consider a heavier food, you know, later in the day, that may impact you. So those are really helpful tips that you brought up, Leslie, that people can certainly try is do they need to change their diet? Is that impacting their sleep at night? So thanks for bringing those up.
Yeah, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it. Talking physical therapy today, zeroing in a bit on sleep hygiene, but taking other questions as well. The number for you to call in, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. taking a look at all kinds of physical therapy issues today. We've zeroed in on sleep hygiene a bit and how it relates. But we'll take other questions as well with our two guests. Carrie Schwerer manages the UW Health Spine Orthopedics team. Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program. I'm Larry Mueller, of course. I'm so glad you're listening in. Give us a call with your own questions. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And a good email, I think, from Lindsay in Monroe. Wanted to know if there are any hereditary factors in insomnia or sleep problems. Her father, both her sisters and her daughter all have sleep issues. She says she can follow all the recommendations for good sleep, and she still can't fall asleep.
Right, and that's got to be incredibly frustrating when you follow the rules and you still can't get a good night's sleep. So Lindsay brings up a really good point, wondering if there is a hereditary or genetic component to sleep disorders. And the evidence is soft, but there is some evidence that says there could possibly be a genetic or hereditary factor to some of the sleep disorders because of how you handle stress reactivity. So for somebody like Lindsay, this is something that I would definitely bring up with my physician. Let them know that there are so many people within my family that have this condition as well. And Leslie may be a candidate for a sleep study. So a lot of large health institutions have sleep clinics. UW Health has one. And you can actually have a sleep study done where they actually monitor you throughout the night. You actually spend the night there. And they monitor you and monitor your sleep patterns.
I did that once.
Did you?
Yeah, yeah. It was interesting.
And why did you have it done? Were you having difficulty sleeping?
At the time, yeah.
Yeah? And what did you change or what did you find?
There were some sleep apnea issues.
There
you go. I lost some weight and took care of it.
Okay, great. So there you go. And now you sleep well.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
So those sleep studies can be very helpful for people who have done everything like Lindsay has and they're still having issues.
And more recently, we have seen that there is another version that UW is doing where they actually give you the equipment to take home and sleep in your own bed because they think it may be a little bit more of the reality you're living from day to day, whether you have kids coming in and out all night. But both versions. And if the first one flags as being concerning, then they may have you do the more amped up one in the facility. But it can certainly reveal other things.
I did that one, too, later on, and just to see if I – and, yeah, it worked. It was interesting hooking yourself up to all those electrodes or whatever they were, but it actually showed that sleep apnea had gone away. So,
well, that's great. Good.
Yeah. Well, Tim in Stone Lake has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Tim.
Yeah, this is Jim. Yesterday – when I was walking on the ice-covered road, I slipped and fell and really crashed down on my right arm. And right now, my hand, my top of my right hand is real swelled up and it's discolored, but I can press in on it and I don't feel any pain. And I was wondering if I can just let it heal on its own.
Tim, I would recommend that you get medical attention as soon as possible. Anytime you hit your arm or leg, for that matter, and you get a lot of swelling in a lot of different places and discoloration of your skin, that really needs to be addressed by a medical professional to make sure that there's not a fracture and to make sure that the swelling isn't interfering with your nerve's ability to give messages to those areas. So I would recommend you be seen today.
Yep. I would make that call, and they can do some quick x-rays and kind of rule out a fracture right away. They can look and make sure that your blood supply is intact, things like that. They may be able to offer you a splint or immobilize you if they feel that's indicated and make sure that you're on the right path.
Yeah, there you go. Do it today, Tim. Yep. Let's go to Steve in Wausau. Hello, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. In the beginning of the show, I heard a gentleman on there about a pain behind his ankle bone or the big bone. Well, I've got a pain back there, too, and I kind of know what it is from going to the doctor and the podiatrist for maybe 10, 15 years ago, and it's a ganglion cyst that I have, but no one will operate on it because it's very near a artery.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, other than building a shield or something. But the only time when I, if I have a miss, like in my gait, if I just have the left foot kind of come through and the heel of the left foot hits the right ankle, you know, on that ganglion cyst, it sends me right through the roof. And, you know, I'm not going to take any pain medication because it's gone in about 10 seconds.
Right.
You know, have you ever heard of this before?
Oh, yes. Yes, as a matter of fact, we could compare ganglion cysts because I have one as well. They're very common in the wrist. I don't think they're quite as common down by your feet. So obviously on that inside of your left ankle, you are really prone to hit it. Have you ever made or has anyone suggested a donut?
I have no idea what that is.
Okay, so it's not the kind you eat, although you may want that as well. But you can take a piece of felt or a piece of foam. And you cut a circle and then you leave the inside open where the ganglion would sit. So basically you pad around the perimeter of it. Most people want the donut to be a little, just the slightest bit thicker than your ganglion actually itself. So if you hit that, you would actually hit the donut instead of hitting that ganglion cyst. And you can tape these on. You can wrap them on. Some people feel if they put them right over their ganglion and pull a tight sock on, they'll stay in place. And so that would kind of be my first line of defense. Most people can get their shoe on over it without any difficulty.
So now, so you use felt and you
or
kind
foam.
Of
foam. Yep. You go to the like a craft store or mm-hmm. any medical place has these that we use them to pad casts and things like that. So it's very dense.
Okay.
And you can buy them in different thicknesses or double them up or whatever. And you literally just cut a circle out. So it would be about as big as maybe
dollar?
Like a silver dollar. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then you cut a hole in the middle. So you fold it in half and cut a little hole in the middle. And then you just place it right over the ganglion. That'd be the cheapest and easiest first line of defense.
Probably available at pharmacies and so forth.
The material is probably, I would think a craft store might actually even be a better place to start.
The only reason I thought pharmacy was because maybe the pharmacist would have some experience he or she with.
Maybe. You know, they have the pads you can get for corns, mm-hmm. and you could stack a bunch of those up too to make it thick enough, and you could put those on. Those would be adhesive. So that'd be another option.
All right.
Something along those lines.
There you go, Steve. Thank you for calling.
Yep.
Mitch in Highland Park, Illinois. It is your turn.
Hello.
Hi, Mitch.
Hello. Good. I've got a damaged supraspinatus muscle in my back that is atrophied and doesn't cause any trouble except when I like to take long walks. After about an hour, it gets very painful. And I'm wondering, is there anything I can do while walking to keep that pain away, some type of movement or, you know, anything? I do the exercises the PT gave me to try to build it up, but doesn't seem to make much difference.
Yeah, so the supraspinatus is a rotator cuff muscle that's in the back of your shoulder, for those of you who don't know. And so what I'm guessing is with walking and your arm being in that dependent position for a prolonged period of time, it's just a lot of load and demand on those muscles that have to hold your arm up. So first thought is, I don't know if it'd make a difference if you've, have you ever tried using poles?
No, I haven't.
I don't know, Carrie, what do you think about that?
I think that would be a good idea because it would get co-contraction of other muscles in the area, which would take the strain off of the supraspinatus itself and give you a little support.
So that would be one thing, is to try pulling. Other options would be, I think what you probably need is a little bit more back support. I mean, you could go down the path of like a figure eight strap or a strap that kind of holds your shoulder blades back. I think that would be a little bit more cumbersome. I think I'd try the pulling first.
There you go.
Yeah, no, that's helpful. Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Yeah, thanks, Mitch. Brock in Madison, your turn. Hi, Brock.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I had my right knee replaced, full replacement, about 3 years ago. It's been great ever since. Then last week, I was putting in some laminate flooring, spent several hours on the knee, kneeling on it with knee pads, had no pain issues while I was there. But shortly after that, the knee swelled up like a balloon, started to feel rather unstable. So I iced it, laid off of it. But I'm wondering if you can give me any indication of why this happened and if there's something else I should be doing besides what I've already done.
Well, part of the feeling of instability could be because you're so swollen. What happens is your muscles get a little reflex arc in your quadriceps can actually shut down if you have a lot of swelling in your knee. So part of that feeling of instability could be due to swelling. I can't imagine that kneeling on your knee would loosen your components. It seems like that would be a weird mechanism of injury. So I would encourage you to do a ton of icing and to wear some compression. Are you putting any compression on it, Brock?
I have not thus far, no.
So I would go to the local pharmacy and get an ACE bandage and start probably at your mid-calf and wrap it circumferentially up to about the middle of your thigh and get some compression going, because every time you're up and weight-bearing, all of that swelling is going to pool there. So I would try some compression. Doing some icing is great. Make sure you maintain your range of motion. Do some really good quadriceps setting. And if in a week or so you're not better, then I would seek medical care. That would be my recommendation.
Great. That sounds great.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, we're taking a look at all kinds of physical therapy issues on the show today. Our guest, Carrie Schwerer, who manages the UW Health Spine Orthopedics team, she also directs the UW Meritor Orthopedic Residency. Great to have her with us, as it's always fun to have Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum come by. She's an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program. You may have some questions for them, and there's some open lines, so I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. We also have some information online. If you go to wpr.org/Larry, we have some information on sleep and sleep relating to physical therapy issues, but there's a nice piece. It's sleepfoundation.org/article. So there's lots of good information there for you as well. They'll be with us right up till 12:30. We'll take a look now at the news and weather, and then we'll be back. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're taking a look at physical therapy issues on the show today. We've talked a bit about sleep hygiene, habits you can get into to make sure you get a good night's sleep, and other questions as well relating to those aches and pains that some of us get. And Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, one of the experts here, she's an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Carrie Schwerer manages the UW Health Spine and Orthopedic team and directs the orthopedic residency. So great to have both of them here. I think there's one open line at 800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. And we'll go right to the phones again. Thomas in Ripon, it's your turn. Hi, Thomas. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind? Thomas, are you there? Well, sounds like somebody's there. Let's try another caller, Sherry in Whitewater. Sherry, it's your turn.
Hi, Larry. I love your show.
Thank you.
I heard the mentions of ganglion cysts, and I don't know if Lori will approve of this, but I had one on the back of my hand, and I looked it up, and it said surgery is not usually recommended, but more reading, and I found a Bible cure.
Oh, the Bible book.
Yeah, where you take a big book and you smack it. And
yes, you
it
do.
Took me a while to get my young adult son to do this, because he said, "It just feels so wrong." But he did, and it went away. So
yes. So So was it on the backside of your wrist?
It was right on the back of my hand.
Yeah, yeah. That's the most common place you can get a ganglion cyst. And they are classically called Bible bumps for that very reason. But for those listeners who don't know what a ganglion cyst is, it's a small kind of fluid-filled sac that typically forms over a joint or a tendon. It can be linked with trauma, but doesn't have to be. So I have one on the inside of my wrist, and I think it's from doing years of manual therapy as a physical therapist. It doesn't bother me. But yes, typically they're on the backside of your hand, and you can kind of break the fluid-filled sac by hitting it very hard with a very large book, aka a Bible, hence the name Bible Bumps. I don't recommend it. And interestingly, they can come back. And so that's part of the reason people don't do surgery on them is because that fluid-filled sac can come back and fill with fluid again. But apparently you must have burst your sac well enough because yours hasn't come back?
No, it has not come back. And it's been a couple of years.
Okay.
Great.
My son will never forgive me.
I'm sure he probably won't. You know, I wouldn't recommend that unless you have really good bone quality and this, that, and the other thing. So for the average person to go and whack their hand with a very large textbook is probably not indicated, but that's classically what indeed it is called and why it is called that.
Sherry, thank you so much. I hadn't heard. Mm-hmm. I don't think we even know that we've talked about this
I don't
this
think
before.
We have either, but that's exactly what it's called.
All right. You can join in, too, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions or comments. We'll get you on pretty quickly. And we have Jill from Bemidji, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Her husband has a problem with a dragging leg. A doctor friend suggested they make an appointment with a neurologist, which they have, but it isn't until June. In the meantime, he's in pain. It's getting worse. She's wondering if physical therapy might be something that they should consider, and if so, do they need a referral from their doctor for that first?
So, Jill, you absolutely should try and pursue that physical therapy route because June is quite a ways off. And it sounds like your husband is not in the most comfortable of places. And you want to make sure that there aren't strength deficits that come along with that, as it sounds like there may already be. So a physical therapist can do an assessment and figure out if there is something that they can do to relieve those things in the short term. In regards to the can they go straight to the doctor, that depends in part on insurance. Some insurance companies will permit it and some won't. And some states have different laws, which Jill's looking up
right
for me.
So, yes, because you would be in the state of Minnesota. So here in Wisconsin, we do have direct access to physical therapy. Again, it all depends upon your insurance. In the state of Minnesota, you have access to evaluation and treatment with some provisional things such as a time or a visit limit. So in other words, yes, Jill, I believe that you would be able to see a physical therapist at least to be examined to make sure physical therapy is indicated for you. If your PT feels that physical therapy is indeed indicated for your husband, they might have to get a referral at that point, but you should be able to start plugging into a healthcare system. And I would definitely, as Carrie said, get plugged into the system sooner rather than later, particularly because your husband's getting progressively worse. So you don't want to wait until June.
No. Good luck. Thank you. Drew in Walworth, your turn now. Hi, Drew. We got Drew there. Oh, well, maybe lost Drew. Are you there?
Hello.
Hi, Drew.
Hello.
Yes, Drew, are you there?
Yes, I am.
What's on your mind today?
I had a sleep study many years ago, and the result was that I had an abnormal sleep cycle. And I'd like to know from your guests, what exactly does that mean?
So did they explain it to you when you had it done, Drew? Like
well,
what it meant or its implications were?
I am not background. So to me, it was just a bunch of mumbo jumbo. And so I just walked away thinking that, you know, this is it and this is the best it's going to be. So, you know, suck it up and go on.
So what kind of symptoms do you have now, or how is your sleep now?
Oh, I bet I awake at least 5 or 6 times a night. I am able to get back to sleep.
Okay.
But it just is, it's been that way for so many years that I just have come to accept it.
Yeah.
Drew, are there things in particular that wake you up in the middle of the night, or do you just wake and go back to sleep?
I just wake up. Nothing seems to be bothering me. I can easily fall asleep. That doesn't seem to be the problem. My problem seems to be staying asleep.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. So with this, if you have an abnormal sleep cycle, which could mean many things, it could, you know, be that your sleep cycle shortened. That sounds like you wake up frequently throughout the night. The things that would be really important is to still make sure that you are getting adequate sleep, even within those frequent wake-ups. As long as you can fall back to sleep relatively quickly and you're still getting adequate sleep, that would be what's most important.
I would, just thinking about this myself, you said it was several years ago,
right,
that you were given this information. It may be worth going back.
Absolutely.
And talking to the doctor.
Absolutely. See if anything's changed, gotten better, gotten worse. There's new technology now. Maybe there's something that could help. Different medication, all sorts of things. So if it is really impacting your life, it would be certainly prudent to either repeat it or kind of revisit it. I think that's a great idea.
And I would always recommend writing down the questions
right
that you have so that hopefully you can get around that mumbo jumbo, as you stated it, because it's really important that you understand what your test results mean, because you can't do anything to change what's going on if you don't have a good understanding of what's going on. So I would keep asking questions until you feel comfortable with that.
Absolutely.
What do you mean by that?
Right.
That's a good question
right
to ask.
Exactly. Exactly.
What does that mean?
Exactly.
All right. Good luck, Drew. Thank you. Abby in Altoona, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Abby.
Hello. Good morning or afternoon. So the end of July, the last Sunday, or January, sorry, I went into urgent care for back spasms, and that's the first time I've ever had that experience. So I was having what I thought was kind of normal sciatic issues for me, but I haven't had them for several years, probably 10-ish years. But so I went to urgent care, and I've started for pretty much most of January. I've been going to a physical therapist, and it's better. I haven't had the spasms. And the only thing that concerns me is it's my left leg, and my foot always feels like it's waking up from being asleep. So that's the only thing that I'm kind of concerned about, mm-hmm, and they know this too, mm-hmm, but I'm wondering how long I should wait until maybe I was to get an x-ray or something. I haven't had one yet.
Carrie, what do you think?
Well, Abby, do you feel like that sensation is generally getting better or getting more localized to what it was, say, a month ago?
Yeah, it's definitely getting better. Sleep is definitely better. I'm not getting quite the pain in that, you know, buttock area. And
do you feel like it's coming from your foot?
It kind of goes around. It kind of goes all the way down my left leg at its worst.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, after work and et cetera, that's when I feel, you know, the worst at the end of the day, which sometimes interrupts my sleep then. But lately I've been getting a little bit better sleep, but it's still, I could almost say that 24/7 I have that sensation in my foot.
Does it feel like it's going from the foot and more into the ankle and working its way up toward the back?
Yes.
Okay, so that's actually a really good indicator. In the spine PT world, we have what we call peripheralization, which means it's out in the neighborhood, and centralization, which means it's by the spine. So we actually want those symptoms to go from the neighborhood to the spine. And even though it can be a slow process and frustrating, that does indicate that things are getting better. You are seeing a physical therapist, so I would, you know, put your trust in that person. They're going to have a good sense of when they feel like things are plateauing or not progressing, and they should be equipped and trained to get you to a physician if they feel like that's needed. But it sounds like you're going in the right direction, and some patients, however challenging that may be in order.
Right. Yep.
It's not always, as fast as you'd like.
Right. It's always slow when it's your condition. Always. But I think you're doing the right thing.
Thanks, Abby. Appreciate it. Well, Dave in Cary, Illinois, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Hey, I love the program. This is fantastic. Listen, I've had recent surgery on my left shoulder in November, and they cleaned up the rotator cuff, a little bit of a tear. But I had so much pain in the bicep when I hold my guitar. I can't even hold the guitar. It was so bad. So what they ended up doing was a bicep tenotomy.
Yep.
Cutting the long head of the tendon free.
Yep.
And letting the bicep slide down.
Yep.
He said, go play your guitar a week later. My God, it was wonderful.
Yep.
No pain. I feel great.
Yep.
Now what I'm afraid of is my right arm is starting to exhibit symptoms very similar to that bicep pain.
Yeah.
When I reach for my right, the wallet in my back pocket, and I can feel that bicep pulling.
Yeah.
What can I do to avoid surgery? How do I stretch that? How do I move that out? Or is it even possible?
It is. Anytime you get a tendinopathy in the bicep, so it takes forever to heal. First of all, I personally love a tenotomy. They're one of my, they really help with pain. I do believe that the biceps tendon is a big pain generator in the shoulder. So either a tenodesis where they take it and they reattach it, or a tenotomy where they cut it and just let it kind of meld in with the rest of the short head of the biceps. I think it's a good surgery. They're becoming more popular, actually more common, because they have good outcomes. With regards to your other side, your biceps may be irritated because the ball and socket joint, the humeral head, is sitting forward and it's kind of rubbing on your biceps all the time. So it may be that a postural and joint mobilization treatment strategy may be helpful to offload your biceps. I'm guessing if you had surgery on your shoulder, you saw a physical therapist for that. Is that correct?
Not for the right one, for the left one. And
yeah.
We were doing the I's and the Y's and the T's,
yep.
And then I got away from it,
yep.
And I've been starting to do that again. And but my question, too, in doing those,
yeah.
I pull my shoulders down and back,
yep.
And then I perform those exercises,
yep.
With the best posture I can.
Yep.
Is that right, or should I be relaxing more?
You don't have to pull it all the way to the end range. So I like people to activate those muscles in a down and backward motion, but you don't have to go all the way to end range. If you really squeeze hard and back, down and back, and try and do some of those exercises, that would probably actually irritate your biceps tendon. I think what I would suggest, Dave, is you've had a PT in the past for the other shoulder. I think it would be worth a visit or two with your physical therapist to get this side under control before it really blows up bad. So you're trying to do these exercises. I think you might need them tweaked, changed, modified just a little bit to get this other side under control. So I'd go back and see your pal, the PT who got you through the first one, and see if they can help you conservatively on this other arm.
Good luck, Dave. Thank you.
Okay. Well, hey, thank you, folks.
You're appreciate welcome. Good luck.
Yes. Bye.
Well, we had Krista from Eau Claire email to ask about exercise and sleep. Does it matter if you exercise morning or night, or is it just important to do it?
This falls into the category patient know thyself. For some people, they need to exercise in the morning. Otherwise, they can't go to bed. Other people can exercise and fall right to sleep. I don't care if you have any other comments on that. I've never seen research showing one or the other.
I haven't seen research showing one or the other. And I can just say anecdotally that it can change over your lifetime as well. In terms of when I was in college, I used to be able to exercise at night, crash, burn, sleep for 6 to 7 hours. Now, if I were to exercise right before bed, I would probably be up until the wee hours of the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've heard that from patients as well. So know thyself, as Jill said, and you should be good to go.
I know that it can change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there we go. Well, let's go to Gary in Rhinelander. Hi, Gary.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So recently, I've been experiencing pain down my right shoulder and kind of in my neck, just when I perform a task that I've performed at work for years. It's, cutting meat. When I stand at the cutting board at a regulation height, table, as I start cutting the meat, I start experiencing this pain that starts in my neck and goes down my right shoulder. As soon as I'm done with this task and move on to something else, it seems to go away, and I'm not bothered by it that I can tell any other time during the day. I have tried, it feels like my back is tightening up, and so I've tried stretching my hamstring, and that gives me some temporary relief. But as soon as I go back to the task, within a couple of minutes, it starts tightening up, and I'm feeling this pain that's really quite uncomfortable.
Gary, can you describe for Jill and I where that shoulder pain is occurring when you're doing your cutting task?
Yeah, it seems like when I have my head tilted down, it seems to start in my neck, kind of all around, and then it goes down into my right shoulder and kind of radiates down, not past the elbow, I would say.
Yeah, it sounds to me, I'm wondering if this is coming from your neck. I'm not really sure why the hamstring stretching would help. It might just be moving your whole nervous system a little bit. But if this is something that you need to continue to do for your livelihood, you know, being right-hand dominant, I'm pretty sure you only want to cut meat with your dominant hand. This is something I would see a physical therapist for. It may be that we can change posturally some positions that would help you, give you some stretching or some mobilization that would minimize this, because the last thing you want to have when you are chopping meat with a knife in your hand is to lose grip or power or anything like that in your hand. You could have some really negative consequences. So I think it's worth seeing a physical therapist for a couple of visits. It sounds like it's coming from your neck.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Thomas and Ripon, your turn. Hi, Thomas.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
I tried calling earlier, and I don't know, the phone dropped. My wife has degenerative disc disease.
Uh-huh.
And she just got this MRI. She's had back pain since she was born with, I guess, the bottom five vertebrae fused. Mm. So she thought. But they're saying, let me read this real quick. So a large amount of degenerative disease all the way from the third vertebrae to the fifth vertebrae. The worst is right where the lumbar spine sits on the tailbone.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So
what type of therapy?
All the way to the bone, disc bulging into the place, the nerves exit. It's creating... She got into an accident when she was 14, lost her sister, and they said, you would have been a lot of pain when you're about 45. She's 60 right now.
Okay. Yeah, so to have some degenerative changes, kind of arthritis in that lower lumbar spine and the lumbosacral junction, a type of therapy that would certainly help is in the pool, to unload this area and try some exercising in the pool to increase the mobility in that area and get Thomas's wife a little bit stronger. So the first place I would start with would be some pool therapy, slowly combine that with some land-based therapy and see if we could get her a little bit stronger.
Ripon, Wisconsin, there should be pools.
Oh, yeah, up that way.
In that area.
Yep, mm-hmm. Fox Valley area.
Yeah. That would help.
Yep, absolutely.
All right. Well, we are closing in on the end of the show here today, and I want to go back to that article that we put up on Wisconsin Public Radio. It's go to WPR.org/Larry, and the article is from the Sleep Foundation, so sleepfoundation.org/articles/sleep hygiene. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of good information in there, right?
Right, and lots of different resources to go to. So there's all sorts of things. So I did feel it was a really good resource when Carrie and I looked at it and thought it was a good strategy. It's got some lists for how many hours of sleep you need, some recommendations it can make regarding sleep hygiene. Because we kind of give sleep an afterthought.
Yeah, we shouldn't do that.
We should not do that. Exactly.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you both for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Thanks
very much.
Thanks for having us, Larry.
Carrie Schwerer is manager of the UW Health Spine Orthopedics Team, directs the UW Meritor Orthopedic Residency. Jill Tynissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Great to have them on the show, and we will, I'm sure, in another month, talk again about physical therapy issues.
Absolutely.
Tomorrow on the show, we'll talk about learning the language of love. What do you think about that? I'll be all ears. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller.